try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total protonic reversal.
Protonic reversal.
Protonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that we've brought about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharp and nails.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take. What's yours?
Protonic reversal.
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed it is. It is a science thing. It's a science place. It is a scientific fact that we are all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only Protonic Reversal. Welcome to it. Episode 457. Boy, are those some numbers, huh? I'm going to be, in mere moments, talking to not just one of the coolest drummer guys that I know, but also, you know, guys, a true heart of the underground. You know, BB Gun is a zine that I still have copies of. You know, we've ever talked about that. Maybe we have. I don't remember. He's played with so many great luminaries. And he has a new record called Beach Bongo Bloodbath, so alliterative, that I can't wait to talk to him about. But I can't wait to talk to him about it because I got to do this. Welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I'm your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer. It's been touring and recording for 26 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and he's the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 457. Now, if this is your first time listening to the show, archives are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding at protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will achieve that goal. If you like the show, even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share it around the internet, even leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords, and it's just a darn nice thing to do. Okay. So, yeah. As you all know, back from tour with Red Cross. That was great. That was amazing. We did a lot of stuff. There's some June tour dates on the East Coast, so stay tuned for that. Follow on social media for that. Conan Neutron, the Secret Friends, New York, Boston, you know, Western Mass, Baltimore, so on and so on. But we're not here to talk about all that. We're here to talk about some Beach Bongo Bloodbath with Bob Burt, which is, I wonder if people realize how alliterative that is until they actually say it aloud. But of course, he's returning, technically speaking, for the fourth time. But two full episodes. Let's bring him on. Bob Burt, welcome back to the show, man. Great to have you.
Hey, baby. What's going on?
So I figured out while I was doing the intro, you've been on two regular episodes. And then reason why I was like, oh, why does that feel not right, is because you were good enough to come on for the 10th anniversary 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Which had those, the idea was 10 minute segments, but some of them went long.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Last Steve Albini podcast, by the way.
Oh, so, boy.
R.I.P. But and I really appreciated that. It's kind of cool, man. I've been listening to this record, and it's neat what you're doing with drums, and there's songs that are, like, notably guitar songs with no guitars of any kind. And I think that's very clever. It's very cool. Was this built out of doing those shows that you were doing, like you'd play with Rip Room and a few other bands that you did, like, kind of these solo shows? Was it built off of doing that, or was this something you thought about doing for a while?
No, it was definitely built off of that. And I did like a bunch of solo shows, four solo shows, not a bunch. But and then, you know, I'm very lucky that I have this recording studio / practice space that I share with my longtime friend Mark C. from Live Skull, which, you know, all the equipment is his. I just have my drums and stuff there. Right. And I had time off because from like 2012 to like the beginning of 2023, I was, you know, touring around the world with Lydia Lunch and then John Spencer. And then all of a sudden that came to an end, which was good because my girlfriend partner that I was living with got some health issues. So I ended up having to stay home and take care of her.
And that's happened before too. That's a like
yeah,
a second
time. I've spent over 10 years of my life taking care of someone. And now, sadly, she is in a nursing home with full-blown dementia at the age of 56. So, you know, while I was, you know, stuck in town, I said, well, you know, I did these solo shows. Let me lay down some tracks. And it was so casual. I would go in for like 2 afternoons and then I would listen to it for a month and go back for 2 more afternoons. And, you know, over the course of the year or whatever, it was just like, you know, if you put together all the studio time, it would come to maybe 6 days, but it was done really casual. Kind
of sort of piecemeal, like putting it together, total, like later on.
Total piecemeal.
It was the idea that you were going to, that, hey, this is going to be a thing when I'm done with this. This is going to be a record. Or was it just like, ah, let's just see what
well,
this
I wanted
like.
It to be a record, but I wasn't, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. And of course, you know, I did the performances, like, you know, and then when I laid down the tracks, I started getting into overdubbing and, you know, doing all that kind of thing. So, you know, if I were to perform solo again and play these songs, they would sound so stripped down, but, you know.
Right, unless you like do like the thing with the looping pedal or whatnot, like
yeah, yeah,
what's his nuts does, which is like, oh, that's great. That seems like a lot of work, but
yeah, it was a lot of work even without that because
yeah,
was,
yeah,
you know, all my stuff that I used for this setup was up on the shelf, so I had to bring it all down, set it all up to rehearse, and then when I was done after the shows, I had to put it all back up, and I didn't want it clogging up, you know, the practice space,
right?
So. You know, it was a pain in the neck, but that's what led to making the album.
Yeah, and it's good. So was the idea always to like kind of mix and mash between like, you know, hey, I'll have my own songs and like, you know, like whatever, you know, Love Comes in Spurts with just drums is going to be like, you know, or not just drums, but like, you know, in a non-guitar based arrangement is going to feel way different than it is with the Voidoids.
Yeah, but all the songs on the album, except for Oink Oink by David Peel, they were played live. And that's why they were mainly picked because, they were songs I liked, but also I was able to play the percussion and sing at the same time.
Sure, yeah, it's important. That's yeah. An important thing to know, so, right? Yeah.
So that's how those songs came up. And I'm really happy with the result. It's just kind of, it's unique and, it's, I dig it.
It's pretty unlike most records. You know, it's very unique. Like I said, I don't know if anyone else has picked on the alliteration, but Bob Burt Beach Bungle Bloodbath. Boy, that's a lot of bees.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I thought that was great. I was like, that's hilarious. And also, you know, it has that. There's the it's hard not to think of the word bongo without beach involved with it, right?
And it's funny because I just came up with that title because I had that song, which was an instrumental, and then I came up with the simple words. I said, well, that's a good album title. And now it's so funny because a lot of the reviews that are coming back are just like, this album has this, you know, 60s movie theme thing going on. And that was like never a thought. And then, but, you know, yes, the album actually does have a lot of bongos on it.
I mean, I guess just sort of like maybe kind of like a beatnik thing a little bit, just because of the percussion. But like, it doesn't seem like a throwback.
No, you know,
situation at all to me. But I don't know. It also depends. But it's also interesting just to see what people hear, because especially when it's something kind of idiosyncratic, you know, people can read interesting or weird or just obtuse things.
Yeah.
At least they're listening, right? I mean, that's the important thing.
It's funny because I just released a video for Love Comes in Spurts the other day.
It has Richard Hell in it.
Yes.
And, I thought that was rad. I was like, oh, that's great. He got Richard.
Yeah. By
the way, I've had Ivan Julian came on this show a couple years back. He was great.
I just saw him the other night.
Oh, fantastic. He's such a cool guy, man.
Yeah. And I had, I took a photo with him that I posted online where I'm holding his album and he's holding that one. But it's funny because
I've never had Richard Hell on the show though, and I didn't think about it until I was like, oh, maybe we should hit Richard.
Yeah,
before that, you let him know that you did the song. Was he like, well, oh, cool? Like, do you know that guy?
I wrote him an email, and I just said, I told him who I was. I had interviewed him like 26 years ago for BB Gun.
For BB Gun, sure. Yeah, yeah. And
so, I said, oh, hi, Richard. I don't know if you remember me, blah, blah, blah. I did this version of your song. And then he wrote me back. And I said, it would be really great if you could, if we could just film you walking down the street and there'd be a cameo in the video.
Yeah.
And he wrote me back. I couldn't have asked for a better response. He loved the song. He goes, oh, yeah, I'll be in the video, but I'm, going away for a month on Thursday. And I'm like, well, can you do it Wednesday? And he's like, yeah, okay. So we just went down to his neighborhood and met him on the street. And he couldn't have been nicer. He was so cool. And, and that's how it happened. And it was just kind of like, it just worked out so well.
That's so great because he's like kind of one of the last of those guys, right? Of that era to a certain
He's the last living heartbreaker. That's sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. And it's amazing, that he did survive because he was a drug addict like the rest of them. And, and it was when I talked to Ivan the other night, I said to him, I said, oh, I got Richard to be in my video. And he was like, really? He like never wants to go leave the house. He was like totally shocked.
He was like impressed. That's awesome. what a great player that guy is, man. It's such an insane story. Like the whole he's out touring on, Build Me Up Buttercup and the Foundations. Like what? And that's like his prehistory.
Well, I just recently, when I posted that picture, I told this story about how when I was 21 years old, I was, I don't know. Did you read that whole thing?
I did, but please tell the listeners because it's a great story.
Yeah, so, I was like, I discovered CBGBs early, like 75, and I was going, this is like before I ever even imagined being a musician myself. I was just, a stoner kid from Jersey going to see all these great bands. And I was, looked up to all these people. They were like rock gods to me. And that one day I was there and I went into CBGB's disgusting bathroom and Ivan was in there and he pulls out a half pint of Bacardi from his pants and pours it into a cup of Coke and offers me the Bacardi. And I was just like, turned him down. But I was just like this kid that was just like, oh my God, this rock star talked to me. And then he says like, who can afford the drinks in this place, which is, CBGB's on the Bowery in 1976. Right. It's like, what, a rum and Coke was what, $2?
Yeah, $1.50 or something, right? Exactly. No, that's it. But it's a great story, right? Because it gives you an indicator of what it was actually like. Yeah. And that's a very mythologized era amongst people, into a certain kind of music, which we can charitably say probably are listening to this show.
Yeah.
That, those little tidbits, those little vignettes, if you will, it's a window into that world.
Yeah,
it's one of the reasons why the Lakes McNeil book was so interesting. Right?
Totally. I've read that book 3 times.
It's so good. And it's not only because it's like, oh, that's the first book I've seen like kind of written that way. It's like, no, because it makes you feel like you're like sitting in the conversations.
Well, yeah, and all these books that are coming out, I just the last couple books I read was the Fab Five Freddy book and also Adele Bertet's book on the no wave scene with, regarding women and, it's just so many things. It's just like, you're there, you appreciate it. You're a fan. You love all the music, but it's great to know like who was sleeping with who and,
Sure. Yeah. It's the dynasty of it all, right?
Behind the scenes,
Well, and especially when it's stuff that, if all you have are the records and the music like contextless? And you're like, well, what were these people like? And I still remember, you know, hearing Eight-Eyed Spy and like, what does this band even look like? And then like, you know, saw a picture of Lydia. I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, that's bad.
I saw Eight-Eyed Spy like a million times because as soon as I caught on to the No Wave movement, which was in 78, it was like I started going to see all those bands that were what, or all the members of the bands. I mean, by the time I even saw that record was when it came out, Teenage Jesus and Mars were already done with.
Yeah.
You know, so I kept, you know, and, you know, the first show that I played with Sonic Youth, which was November 3rd in 1983, the opening band was Don King, which was Mark Cunningham and Connie Berg from Mars. And also, and then Lydia Lunch and Ardo Lindsay were at the first show I played. It's just like,
that's amazing.
Yeah, you know.
But it was a small world. It wasn't like a huge thing, right? It wasn't like, you know, this, it wasn't an industry. It wasn't.
No, not at all. And it's amazing that, you know, books are still being written about it and you know, kids are doing like college theses on the No Wave scene. And,
yeah,
you know, and like, it was, you know, at the time, like, if you were going out on a Tuesday night to see DNA, you didn't have to worry if you were going to get into the show.
Right. You know, there's going to be room. Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's so funny too, because did you ever think that, you know, all these years later, people would still be talking about Bad Moon Rising, right?
No, not at all.
But then.
And that's the first album I ever played on, you know?
And I think that's so interesting because, like, and I say this as a fan of Sonic Youth, it does kind of stand alone in the discography because it is that, it's that joining record between like the really early, you know, Super Skronk stuff and then like the later, you know, I mean, for me, like that Evil Sister, that era is so good, but it's different. And it's, there was something that was captured during Bad Moon Rising and, you know, Death Valley 69 and whatnot. That's like, wow, like this is like, it hits different somehow, right?
Yeah. To this day, so many people come up to me and tell me how that record changed their life or you know, that's their favorite Sonic Youth record, which, you know, I'm sure if they ran into Steve Shelley,
he'd be like, all right, I've heard it all. But then also like there's something kind of, there's a special kind of like, it almost sounds dangerous, if that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like something that shouldn't be happening or along those, like it has an element of almost unease to it. And maybe it has something to do with the recording. Maybe it has to do with just what was happening at the band at the time. But like it does hit a little bit different than all the rest of them.
Oh, it totally does. And also, you know, like I've heard things like, you know, some people said that there might not have been a My Bloody Valentine Love List without Bad Moon Rising.
Oh, man.
I don't know if that's true or not, but, you know, I do know Kevin Shields, and he's, you know, he told me he was a big fan. He was also a big fan of Pussy Galore.
Yeah.
But, you know, but here's a little tidbit that I don't even know if I should say, but it cracks me up. Is this like Steve Shelley has told me that his sister's favorite Sonic Youth album is Bad Moon Rising.
That's hilarious. Well, there's something, you know, there's something to be said for that, you know, and it's you don't maybe realize that you're, you know, making history or something. You're just going to make a record.
Yeah.
But I met, you know, Martin Beese. He's been on this show, like, great dude. And I happened to be in New York, not even playing. I was just there for a thing. And, like, I was like, I can't think of anything, like, to do because I don't have any money. I was like, so I hit up Beese. I was like, hey, you around? He's like, yeah, come hang out. And so, like, I went and saw the studio. We just kind of BS'd for a while. And, like, I was like, oh, yeah, that's.
Yeah. I run into Martin all the time.
I was like, there's the big swan's drum, you know? there's like this weird. I was like, oh, this is the plate. And it's so crazy because everything around it's changed.
Oh, my God.
It's so different.
When we went out there to record Bad Moon Rising, it was just Brooklyn. We didn't even know the word Gowanus.
Yeah.
And it was like, totally vacant. There was like packs of wild dogs running around, you know, and now there's a Whole Foods across the street.
Right. Exactly. So the surroundings probably seemed more like how the music would sort of imply it rather than like, this is like way suburban now. Like what happened?
Yeah,
and like, not like, you know, I'm a West Coast guy originally. I live in the Midwest now, but like, having visited New York, you know, over the years as it's changed, it's like, oh, it's so different than even 20 years ago, let alone 40 years ago, right?
I get a kick when you hear these kids like, oh, remember, you know, St. Mark's Place in the 90s? And I'm like, I remember it was in the 60s.
Yeah, you thought that was something.
It was way cooler then.
Right. Yeah, and then there's something to be said for recordings kind of capturing a moment in time too. So it's not just a moment in time for Sonic Youth, but it's a moment in time of, you know, that whole scene that's important. That's cool.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to have been a part of it, I guess, you know.
I remember first time that you came on the show, it was shortly after Hitmakers had just started, which is hilarious because that seems so long ago now.
Yeah.
And by the way, I saw John's new band with the Bobby Lee's folks on the cruise, on the Underground Garage cruise with Red Cross. And man, it was freaking awesome. But it's way different from Hitmakers. And that's why I thought was kind of cool. I was like, it's so different. That's awesome.
Well, yeah, you know? It's kind of like, you know, because pretty much at least the last year or year and a half of the Hitmakers, I kept thinking to myself, like, this is stupid. John should just get two kids, you know, because it's like,
yeah,
all four members of the Hitmakers lived on different parts of the world.
Because you had Sam, you had Sword, you had you. Yeah.
And even after Sword, we had Andy from Berlin. And,
that's right. Yeah.
You know, and we did that one tour with Janet Weiss. And it was a really cool band. I think it stands out from his catalog just because of, like, Sam and, you know, and the synthesizers and stuff. But, you know, it was just kind of crazy because John Spencer's audience is 95% from the Blues Explosion.
Sure, of course.
And all the shows I did with him, every single show, at least three people would come up to me afterwards and say, hey, where did you get the idea to play this metal drum kit?
So meanwhile, me and Dale Crover are sitting there like, oh shit, they're playing Pussy Galore stuff. That rules.
Yeah, yeah. You know? There's a few of you guys, but for the most part.
But we're the uber nerds of uber nerds. Yeah. Or, you know,
we love that. John has a very male audience. You know, we would go around the world, we'd play like three or four Pussy Galore songs, and it would just get the same response as all the other songs. As soon as we hit those bell-bottom notes, the whole crowd
would lose their minds. But I mean, but those are great records, you know, those are great songs. Yeah, and it's just, but it's also, the idea of that being sort of like the final form John Spencer of like taking all of the things that from all the bands and kind of putting it together, I think work really well for the people that appreciate that kind of thing. But
yeah.
But then you know, this new band is crazy because I mean it's almost like you know big business or something because it's so bass forward that it's like oh my god, like this is almost daunting at first, but like in a way that's kind of cool for you know peace and love for an older cat. This, you know,
there's this show I watched the other night with Jason Samoa. It's all about the Bobby Lees.
And
they're like making a new album and.
He basically single-handedly saved that band, right? Is my understanding.
And then there's like, you know, they're playing Irving Plaza and stuff. And it's just like, they didn't mention John once through the whole thing. It was kind of weird, but, you know, so, I mean, but John is like, you know, he lives on the road.
Yeah. I mean, and he loves doing it. And that shows. I will say on that Underground Garage cruise, and there was a lot of, I mean, the Big Star freaking played and the Big Star Quintet, whatever they call it, Sonics. Played, you know, like it was stacked.
Bands. Yeah, it was stacked. I was almost tempted to go on, but
hard pressed to say that second set of his band, I was like, that might have been my favorite set because it was just so like intense, like it was just like punishing. Yeah, they did one on the pool, which is the big like that's like the big stage, right? Which is that's where Social Distortion was playing.
Right. Well,
Red Cross played that one too, and then they did one that was like ostensibly like a small club, except for you're in a boat. Sorry, they hate it when you call it a boat, big ship. Okay, fine. But as much as I like, well, I watched the first set from the hot tub, so there's something to be said for that.
Yep.
But I was like, is this low-key like my favorite set of, and I'd never seen, I know it's not Big Star technically, but it's like, I never thought I would see those songs played live.
Yeah, you know I saw that. I saw that show out here in Jersey City a couple years ago, and it was.
Like every musician on that ship, and there were plenty, were just like, you know, like for that. But I was like, I think I like the John Spencer set better. Like, very different, obviously.
Yeah.
But I was like, good for him, man. Like, that's badass. And it's, you know, I thought hitmakers were awesome. But again, it's almost a product design for me. Of course, I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And you're sitting around trying to source gas tanks in Europe. Like, I need, you know.
You know, he did the right thing because, like, you know. Now he lives in the same town. He lives in Woodstock. And so, you know, if they get offers like that, they could just do them. Whereas with the Hitmakers, it was just like, hey, we could play this big festival. Well, we have to fly everyone in.
Right. Everyone has to get in one place first.
And then, the metal drum kit, you know.
I mean, that's something you talked about that last time. I think of just like, you know, that gets exhausting. Just like, you know, it's not like you can just have, hey, here's the back line. You know, it's like, well, you can, but they're not. Yeah. And then, you know, was it like, if you hear, here's a plastic tub or, you know, something totally like, it's like, that's not.
I just did the thing where I was telling stories at this genre is death event. And I said that, you know, between Pussy Galore and John Spencer and the Hitmakers, I've been in more junkyards than Sanford and Son.
Respect, actually. Yeah. That's a great line. And also true. Yeah, and that's something that it's weird because I think like the junk percussion thing, like a lot of the industrial bands kind of helped bring that more into the zeitgeist for a while.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting because in Pussy Galore, I feel like there wasn't a lot of, I mean, what, you Neubauten, right? I guess.
Well, that was John's whole concept, was like combining Neubauten with like Pebbles 60s garage rock, you know, and it was a good combination, you know, and metal percussion and no bass. I mean, it's just like, it's never going to like, you know, go mainstream, but people that love Pussy Galore love Pussy Galore.
Dude, when I first got that cassette, I thought there was something wrong with it. I'm like, oh, somebody must have jacked this up or something. They play it too much. And I was like, oh no, I think it's supposed to sound like that. And then I was like, oh no, I get it now that I'm on the same level with it. Like, right. I understand what they're doing. But at first I was like, huh? Like, what's happening? Because I heard Chrome Cranks first. I heard Blues Explosion first. And I kind of like went backwards.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, I got to check. Oh, it's got Julia in it too. That's all. Because I like Free Kitten a lot as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is insanely unique and I'm totally here for it. But at first I was like, ugh. But a lot of my favorite records, I have a ugh like reaction at first because, you know, it's doing something bold and different. And I mean, I feel like Steve really got you guys too. Like, I feel like what he recorded.
Oh yeah. And he was one of the first, you know, we were one of the first bands apart from maybe Urge Overkill that he actually ever recorded. And, you know, we had, done an East Coast jaunt with Big Black. And that's when I got to know Steve really well. And then he ended up, you know, working, you know, on Dial M for, and Sugar Shit, and also he did my second Bewitched album, Harshing My Mellow.
Oh, Bewitched, of course, yeah.
So I had Steve staying at my house, you know, for a couple weeks here and there, and you know, that was fun.
Yeah, and I feel like he was so thoughtful towards things in a way that was influential in a good way. I think, but didn't initially come off that way. It seemed like, oh, this guy's going to be so thoughtless. No, quite the contrary.
But he, you know, he added the cock ring to the metal snare drum and that, you know, that
the rest is history. Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a little things, you know, depending on the cock ring. When did you, and apologies if we've talked about this before, I don't remember. When did you start up BB Gun as a zine?
BB Gun?
Yeah.
I believe the first issue, I could look over here, I think it was like 96.
I was going to say I thought it was 90s.
Yeah, it was definitely 90s.
What was the thought process behind it? Because, again, even explaining zine culture to the kids, it's like, you know, showing a card trick to a dog sometimes. You know, piece of
the thought culture was, you know, it was kind of like the same thought culture that went into Warhol's Interview magazine. Hey, let's put out a magazine, or punk magazine. Let's put out a magazine. We'll get tons of free stuff in the mail, and we'll go invited to parties. And also, it was just when we first started, like, kind of getting into computers, and it was something that to do with my wife, because, you know, she was a graphic designer and photo retoucher like Steve Albini. And like in the first couple of issues were total, like, you know, cutouts on the boards, you know, and then eventually, you know, it got slicker as it went along. And, you know, we wanted to do one a year, and then, like, after every couple issues, we're like, that's it, you know, forget it, it's too much work. And then like, okay, let's do another one. And it was cool because, you know, because I was involved in music, I knew most of the people I interviewed. So I was much more candid and, you know, and it was, you know, very well respected. And then I put a lot of it in my book, which is now out of print.
Yeah, I know. I should have gotten it. I still don't have a copy of that. Yeah. Bloody thing. But no, I always appreciate that you would have, like, okay, so yeah, here's Richard Hell and Kim Gordon, but also Nancy Sinatra, right? Like,
oh yeah,
like, you know, oh man, awesome. Well, was Nancy Sinatra gonna be up to? I can't wait to read this, you know?
Yeah. I asked her if she had sex with Elvis.
Yeah, great. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing that, like, really vibed with me. Again, come with zero context of any kind for anything that was happening on the East Coast, right?
Yeah.
That you had, I still remember the whole Vincent Gallo thing very well.
Oh my God.
Which, can you?
You remember it and I'll never forget it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure you remember better than I do. But Vincent Gallo, who, of course, just for frame of reference, was, you know, a New York dude around, right?
Yeah.
Like he was around to, like, Basquiat and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But
and what a one-of-a-kind personality.
For better or for worse. And yeah. For worse. So explain to me what happened with Vincent Gallo, because I think this story is incredible.
Okay, so, you know, I meet Vincent Gallo backstage at a White Stripes show, and he was with PJ Harvey. And I happen to have magazines with me, and so I gave him a copy, and then I ran into him again at a White Stripes show, like, a couple of nights later. So, you know, he explains to me, you know, okay, you know, I'll do it. I have to be on the cover, blah, blah, blah. And so so I arranged the interview, and we're at the Odessa Diner on Avenue A. And, you know, he's, like, you know, talking, and, you know, he's saying stuff like, you know, he was talking about how Christina Ricci wouldn't promote Buffalo 66. And she went on to make this movie called The Opposite of Sex, which was a gay themed movie. And Vince is, like, talking really loud in the diner. He's just like, yeah. Then she went on to make that faggot movie, that stupid faggot soap. And yeah, I'm, like, breaking down on my chair.
Yikes. Yeah, like, looking around.
We're in East Village. We're not in the middle of Mississippi.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know? And so he goes, so the interview is totally outrageous. So he said a lot of crazy stuff, but I have to admit, I never laughed so hard in my life. And
oh, he's like an absurd caricature, right? I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's any threat of him coming on the show.
And so he goes, okay, I'll get my photographer for the cover photo. And I said, well, you know, I know Richard Kern and Michael Levine. And then he goes, okay, well, Richard Kern will be cool. So Richard Kern comes over and he's sitting with us at the diner, which, you know, Vincent Gallo and Richard Kern.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's what's that conversation.
I think there was a little bit of sexist talk going on.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say. And so, Jesus Christ. What was it, 1945? Because it was like the level of evolution.
Yeah. You know, Richard Kern was talking about how he was shooting some girl's asshole, and it was like moving like a camera lens, and, you know, it's just like,
oh, man.
And so so we do the interview, we take all the photos, and I say to Vincent, And the whole time I did BB Gun, there's only two people that I let read the transcribed interview before I printed it, because I didn't want to, you know, and one was Richard Hell and one was Vincent Gallo. So Vincent Gallo didn't change anything. I thought, like, would he regret saying something like that? But no, he left everything in, which is fine. So I said to him, as soon as I get the contact sheets, I'll show you the contact sheets and you can pick out what photo you like for the cover. He goes, oh, no, no, I trust you guys. I trust you guys. So we put a picture of him on the cover, and I send them 25 copies in the mail, and I don't hear any response. So I figure, okay. So I write him an email. I say, hey, Vincent, did you receive the box of magazines I sent you? He writes back one sentence. Did you have to use the worst possible photo of me ever taken on the cover? You know.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then, you know, around the same time, Sonic Youth was kind of schmoozing him. And I went to a Sonic Youth show at Irving Plaza, and Kim Gordon's saying to me, like, oh, you know, Vincent's really upset with the blah, blah, blah. I'm like, really? He told you before he said anything to me? But anyway. So meanwhile, he hates the cover, but he takes the 25 issues I send him and he signs them and puts them on his website for $100 a piece.
the same website that I believe at one point he was selling his sperm. Right?
Yeah, if I remember correctly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and actually, you know, that was the best selling issue. So we went into a second pressing. And we let him change, you know, so there's two issues with two different covers, basically.
Yeah. I think I have the original one, but I mean, it's so desiccated at this point, I'm sure it wouldn't be worth any money, but like, but you know, this is, again, this is a great window from someone that was nowhere near that world. And again, for the younger people in the audience, like podcasts like this serve the same purpose that like fanzines did back then. Right. That was the only, and you got it asynchronously. It was almost like a message in a bottle sometimes, you know, scene reports and what have you. And I always appreciated that it wasn't just coming from an area where cool stuff was happening, but it was coming from someone that was actively doing things as well, like a participant in those things. And because that's something that, again, it seems antiquated to talk about, but I would actively seek out, okay, when bands would do tour diaries. Oh, wow, what's the tour diary, you know, look like? Oh, yeah, I can't wait to, like, read about this tour and whatnot. And this is, you know, it's such an antiquated idea in this document everything that happens in the process at all times, always culture. But it was important to me, and it was important to a lot of people. And I think it provided a window into a world that people otherwise would have no ability to visit or take part in. So I think it was a valuable service. Thank you. And it's cool that it all ended up in the book. I should have bought a copy. That was stupid of me to do that, right? But anyway.
Yeah, it was like kind of the best. I don't mean to be rude, but here's the deal. So my friends, the Skull Practitioners, are playing in Seattle tonight on this big punk rock show.
Yeah.
So they asked me to invite Mark Arm to the show. And I wrote to Mark Arm. Okay. I wrote to Mark Arm, and Mark Arm is in Costa Rica.
Okay.
But he sent some names for the guest list. So I just need to get this to them real quick.
Otherwise, yeah, it's going to be a real bummer time for people at this show if you don't. It feels like,
yeah, exactly. Oh, the show's tonight, so I'm just going
to do what you need to do. Here.
I'll do this real quick.
And I'll throw up the image of the Beach Bongo Bloodbath record, which is mean to do anyway. So this is a good opportunity for me to do that on the screen, and I'll throw the link in the comments as well, so people can check that out. And we'll get back to that recently. We'll get back to that shortly. All right, so let me find, where did that go to? Okay, pictures. Probably download, right? This is really scintillating.
I'm done. I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, I was. You know what? You got 2-4. I could even put it on the screen.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry about that. I just like, you know, I know the show. I know the time difference, so it's not that big of a deal.
I mean, who amongst us, yeah. Right? You send a text message to the wrong person, and later on you're like, hey, why didn't they write me back? Oh, that's why. All right, so anyway, that's the record cover.
There
right?
you
we'll,
go.
We'll get back to that. What is this cover, by the way?
It's a cover. During the pandemic, I made a series of paintings that were square. And okay. So I just this was one of them. It's kind of, you know, they were like collages, and I threw the cover together. So
nice. I like the green. Kind of reminds me of a Wong Kar Wai or something.
Reminds me of the money I'm not going to get from it.
Hey everybody. Yeah, there it is. There it is. And so you got some vinyl for this as well as a CD, which
yes,
is
vinyl CDs.
And I'm sorry, is that who is it that's putting that out? It's the ones that did the
Bar None.
Bar None. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Feelies and
yeah.
They reissued a bunch of Alex Chilton stuff, and
that's right.
They happen to be located in the same building as where I made the record.
Oh, really?
And so I presented it to them, and I thought, well, if they don't like it, you know, send it off to In the Red. And
that makes sense because the Feelies, you know, being Jersey, you know, like that, yeah. It's like hope. You know, that absolutely makes sense.
I'm going to see them on Saturday. Do Crazy Rhythms.
Oh, fantastic! That's great. Where are bands playing in Hoboken now? Now there's no Maxwells anymore.
Nobody's playing in Hoboken, but the White Eagle Hall is in Jersey City, and that's, you know, where I saw Red Cross. It's like so many good shows, and unfortunately, that venue's closing in September.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's where, you know, it was so great because it's a beautiful venue, kind of Bowery ballroom size, maybe a little bigger. Okay. And Todd Abramson books it, so I never had any problem getting into any shows. And, you know, I saw the Big Star show there and so many bands. The first time I went there was L7 with the Death Valley Girls. And
fantastic.
And, you know, I saw Lemon Twigs there, Spiritualize, so many great shows. And it's just an Uber away, so it's so nice.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, at this point, it's been a while for Maxwell's, but I feel like that was Hoboken to me. It was just like, oh, it's Maxwell's.
I spent half my life there, you know. Yeah. And they made a documentary that's coming out next year.
Oh, cool! That's awesome.
And I'm in it, and I tell the whole story about the, you know, the Pussy Galore concert that got canceled because I hung those flyers all over the town.
Right. Different times, everybody.
Yeah.
Different times. You've got a Velvet Underground song on the Beach Bongo Bloodbath record.
Yes.
But it's not one of the super more, it's not the VU record, right? Like, it's off one of the more, it was the one that was Verve put on, like, 85 or something along those lines. That's how I know it, I should say.
Yeah, I think it was recorded during the third album sessions. I don't know why it wasn't put on the album. It's as good as anything on the album.
Yeah, it's great.
And, you know, I guess I got familiar with it because of the, like, you know, I had this the CD box set forever.
The big box, sure, of course, yeah.
So
that's we actually on the tour with Red Cross, we like went on a Velvet Underground listening binge. And Steven was saying that he thinks that's the best one.
And really?
Like, interesting. Yeah, that was basically my reaction.
I should be interviewing you. I mean, you just toured with my favorite band in the world. You know?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a friggin' dream, man. It was great. Like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, we get to like play every night with one of the best rock and roll bands on the planet. Okay, sounds all right.
I can't tell you how much I love those guys.
So
good. I got the you know the documentary on DVD, and I've watched it like three times already.
It's really good, and I felt so bad. I'll just tell you, because I mean when I had Steven on the show, I hadn't seen it yet because I kept forgetting that it was on Vimeo to rent, because I just keep forgetting Vimeo exists, frankly. And so I watched it like a week after I had him on. I was like, ah, man, I missed so much stuff because there's things I didn't know because my knowledge of them was kind of patchwork. And
I thought I knew everything, but I didn't know anything about that kidnapping story.
Crazy, right? Insane
and
story.
And I also never knew that, you know, that Jeff, you know, had a heroin problem.
Nor did I.
And it's so weird that, you know, he's married to Charlotte, who was the one go-go, the least expected go-go you would expect to be a drug addict.
Yeah. And it's crazy. And you know, and it's so cool. I almost actually, all right, I'll spill all the tea. At one point, we were like sitting around, and I was saying, because, you know, I was doing driving with those guys around, is listening to those guys talk about literally anything, fascinating. Jeff and Steven. Just like, and I was like, it's like I get my own private podcast every day, listening to them just like go back and forth.
I just love them so much.
They're so, because it's not just they have a worldview, they have a point of view, but they're very intelligent and they're very deeply opinionated about certain things, and they're brothers.
Yeah.
So like the way they interact, it's like, this is so interesting. Like, yeah. It's one of those things where sometimes I wouldn't even throw any music on at all. I was like, I have to listen to what these guys are BSing about.
Yeah. It's and you know, and when they,
I offered to produce a pod and produce and host a podcast that was just those guys talking, basically. And I would like set the subject. So
I went to see them. Well, I go to see them every chance I can, but I went to see them in Asbury Park. And after the show, I got into a like half hour, 40 minute discussion with Jeff about the Incredible String Band. You know, he says,
sure,
oh,
yeah,
you got to read her book and blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, I was, you know, I actually saw them because I'm even older than him. But,
yeah,
you know, it's just like.
And it's it's, dude, they're the best, man. And like, and they're like so interesting as people, but like it's like they have such an incredible swath of great music within their catalog that isn't just one thing, you know?
Yeah, no.
And then when you think about, like, I mean, I think that, like, Red Album and, like, Researching the Blues are, like, two of their best records, and that's, like, within the last 10 years, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane.
I got interviewed for the documentary. Of course, I only got one sentence in there, which is fine.
Yeah.
But a good part of my interview, I was just going on and on, because it was before the Red Album came out.
Yeah.
I was just going on and on about, like, yeah, they went away. And then they came back and made their best album ever with Researching the Blues.
It's,
you know,
it's so great. And like, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, there's no stories like that, really. Everyone wants to have like the story of, even with the Devo, the thing that would, the, you know, coming out of Hulu or whatever. I didn't like, well, and certain other people in the band didn't like how it just was like, oh yeah. And then they stopped. It's like, how about Something for Everybody? Remember that record? Cause that record kicked ass. And that was nowhere to be found in this documentary.
Yeah.
And I get sometimes, yeah. And they're still playing to this day, the ZZ Top one, where it's like, all right, yeah, they glossed over about 9 records nobody cares about, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, I watch them all, and I read so many, you know, music biography, autobiography books, but yeah, they never not fascinate me.
Well, it's, yeah, and it's interesting, like, they're also, you know, they're dudes that are into Kiss, too, which is sort of like, all right, you know, I have found that there's, you know, probably about 10 or 12 Kiss songs that, like, I really like, but it's like,
well, that's the thing,
in the same way, you know?
In the documentary, well, actually, you know, it was the first show that Steve went to, but in the documentary, they actually kind of say, like, yeah, we were into Kiss because everyone else hated them so much.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, like, dude, it's crazy. Like, Jeff only recently started listening to, like, you know, punk rock and hardcore bands. Like, he listened to Fugazi for the first time, like, you know, 6 months ago. Which, like,
and that's admirable.
Okay, you know? That's great, yeah. You know, because, yeah, you got your own world. Why would you need to, you know, sure.
Yeah. It's like, just recently, I've become good friends, mainly because we look alike, but we've been on this with John Cowsill. And, you know, and so I just DJed a show that him and Vicki Peterson did. And I, you know, just recently, like, you know, like a month or two ago, I watched the documentary on Netflix about the Cowsills.
All I really
knew about them was, you know, that the, you know, the Partridge Family wouldn't exist without them, blah, blah, blah. But their story was fascinating. And, you know, it was tragic. They got totally ripped off, and then a couple of them died and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, now every time I see John, I'm just like, you know, it's so cool. Like, I can now say to people, that one of my, I have a good friend that was on the Ed Sullivan show.
Yeah, and there's like, you know, you've freaking played keyboards for Al Jardine and Carl Wilson, you know? I mean, it's like, oh, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, there's, like, it's going to turn. I don't want to take this too far afield, but, you know, there's people that I'm very good friends with. It's like, oh, right. Like, you'll just, like, remember now. Like, oh, yeah, I forgot that you did that. Or you, I didn't do any of that stuff. Anyway. No, but it's interesting to me. I feel like this record that you put out is a very you record, but it's a very New York record. Like, I feel like you can kind of get the feeling that you could, like, wander, you know, into, you know, the cake shop or something and just, like, you know, oh, what's this? You know, like, oh, this is
yeah.
Oh, shit, that's the guy from Chrome Cranks and Sonic Youth, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because, like, you know, Lydia Lunch wrote that great blurb and she said, like,
yeah,
I prove I'm the coolest thing from New Jersey since the vibrating bed.
That's a great line. Leave it to Lydia. we've talked about it in the past, but, you know, I thought the retrovirus stuff was so freaking cool, man. Like,
that was such a high life in my life. And, you know, so many times you play with people, you know, it's just like, you know, when I get done touring with John Spencer, like, I don't want to hear his voice, you know, but Lydia Lunch, I just like loved her. I loved her since I met her. Yeah. We've been close friends ever since. And I could finish a tour with her and throw on the In Limbo record the next day. You know, it's just like, that was like, I never had so much fun being in a band. And, you know, we went places I've never been to before. And this is all like in my 60s, you know, I was like, it was such a great time. And, you know, I'm so glad that happened because that was like, you know, right after my wife died. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm sitting on top of the world. It was such a good thing.
Right. And it's something that there was such careful attention and kind of love put into the presentation of it. And just it being like the best representation, like, look, here's this performer, this artist, this woman that has done all this incredible stuff. And here it's going to be presented in sort of like its best possible form. You know, and I think, again, much like the Big Star thing, but very different. I never expected I'd be able to see that. And I saw that at the AMRAP bash. I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. And also, you know, a lot of those projects that Lydia did might have lasted a month or two.
Short-lived, right?
You know, like Shotgun Wedding never came to America. Yeah. You know, they never toured America. And so it was a really great thing. And so many people came out and all the, you know, all the young goth girls. It was great.
it's a
different thing than touring with John Spencer.
Well, absolutely. It was something where, and I know that, you know, Weasel Walter had a large part of architecting that in his very special Weasel Walter way.
Yeah, and it took us a little while because, you know, she had me. I was the first one she called, and then we got Al just involved, and then we had the hardest time like finding a guitar player. And she asked Paul Leary. She asked, you know, what's the guy from Chicago?
There's a lot of guys in Chicago, Bob. I'm sorry.
I think he was in Revolting Cox.
I can't remember his name right now.
Irish guy.
I know who you're talking about. Whatever. Yeah. Ask a lot of people.
Yeah. So, and he's actually, I think he's the one that actually hooked Weasel up with it. But, and then, you know, we asked Nick Zinner. We had so many people. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, she calls me up. The search is over. Weasel's in.
Well, and it's something that, like, because that's years before I ever saw Flying Luttenbachers. I knew him from, which are great, but I knew him from Lake of Dracula, which is, you know, insane. But, like, clearly coming from that same world.
Yeah, Lake of Dracula opened up for the Chrome Cranks in Chicago. And that's when he came over and started talking to me. And I was just like, "Buzz, this is a goofy guy." And, you know, and I just, you know, never imagined I'd hear his name again. But then, yeah, all of a sudden he's in New York. And as we speak, or very soon, the Flying Luttenbachers are going to China.
That's amazing. I mean, and it's one of those things, like, I've been on, like, multiple, like, Yahoo groups, e-groups, like, mailing lists with that guy over the years. And his knowledge of that kind of music and that world and his fandom for it.
Not just that kind of music. He dives deep in.
Oh, it's breathtaking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, being in a van for hours and years with him and Tim Dahl.
Yeah.
Oh, and then just they would have like.
Talk about your own private podcast. Yeah.
They would have like a 2-day, 8-hour discussion about the discography of the Village People. You know, they would go endless discussions about Kaja Gugu. You know, it's just like insane. And you know, like most of the time, Lydia and I are just in the back seat, like rolling our eyes at each other, like, where do we find these two?
There they go again. Yeah. No, but it's and you know, I have him on one of these days. I've talked about it. You know, I hit him up like a couple years ago about doing it. He's like, yeah, let's do it. And then like, you know, nothing happened. But that happens a lot with this show. I mean, there's only me. You know, sometimes I forget about stuff. But I think he's a genuinely fascinating guy, and it's
absolutely.
You know, he's done so many wonderful things. But if he had just been, you know, the tacit. You know, ringleader of getting that together for Retrovirus, he would have done a wonderful work.
He walked into the first rehearsal and knew how to play all the songs. Yeah. I've been listening to the songs my whole life, and I'm trying to figure them out.
What a wonderful freak. Complimentary. No, I love that guy. He's a fascinating dude. I've seen Luttenbachers in like, I don't know, 5-6 different lineups, and it's like somehow always different, always the same. You know, with that little ass bass drum he's got, we're like, what is happening with this bass drum?
Yeah, yeah.
But it sounds great. Can't knock it, you know?
No, he knows what he's doing.
He knows what he's doing. So having nothing to do with Weasel Walter. I think that there's always kind of some deep love for a lot of your bands. I do feel like Chrome Cranks kind of gets short shrift, and I don't understand why.
Well, I don't understand why either. I mean, you know, when it took me a while. I was really hesitant about joining the Chrome Cranks. And I think the reason why was because it was too much in the vein of Pussy Galore. I don't know why, but I did eventually join. And one of the reasons, one of the big selling points for me was the space that Jerry Teal had, the Funhouse, where we recorded everything and practiced. And, I mean, you know, Pete's ego was pretty big back then, and we did a lot of crazy things. I mean, we did this one tour of Europe, which was like 9 weeks, and we were flying home like the day before Christmas, and, you know, we didn't even have enough money to get on the airplane. And, there was some, you know, but in the long run, I really appreciated the music. And it ended badly because, you know, and we didn't speak for a long time. And then we did the reunion in 2009. However, my album's being released on June 12th. On June 15th, Monday, I got a big bash going on at the Bowery Palace.
Dude, I saw this on Instagram, I'm sure. It's insane, man. Yeah. Like, tell me everything that you have. The like, this is like one of these things would be noteworthy, but there's a lot.
Oh, my God.
Should I pull it up?
Opening up the show will be Genre is Death doing Pussy Galore and Sonic Youth songs. And I'm going to probably join them for a song or two. And then I got Ron Ward with Norman Westberg from Swans and Grasshopper from Mercury Rev and this percussionist, Edward. And they're going to – I'm just going to give Ron a bunch of Bewitched lyrics, and they're going to – they're not going to try to actually do the songs, but it'll be definitely interesting.
an interpretation of those things. Yeah.
Followed by the Skull Practitioners also doing Sonic Youth and Pussy Galore songs. And this isn't, you know, common knowledge yet, but I think Genre Is Death is going to join the Skull Practitioners to do a version of Death Valley 69.
Hell yeah.
And then
that's great.
Followed by that is the Knoxville Girls, the full lineup. I thought Jerry Teal wasn't going to be able to do it, but he's doing it. And so we got, you know, Kid Congo, Jerry Teal, Jack Martin, Barry London, and me doing some Knoxville Girls songs. And then the Chrome Cranks.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, yeah, great. It's going to be insane. You know, and this is all short sets. And
well, isn't there a Wolf Manhattan thing as well?
Closing the show will be the Wolf Manhattan Project, me, Kid, and Mick Collins. And, it was funny because I went to the tribute at Bowery Palace for Clem Burke, which was amazing.
Oh, right,
and while I was there enjoying the show, Jason and Kenneth of the Skull Practitioners said, "We got to do a tribute like this for you." And I was just kind of like, okay, I'm actually trying to think of something to do for the record
release, right? Because you want to have people be there. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I presented the idea to, you know, Jesse Mallon, and they loved the idea. And,
yeah.
So it's happening, and I got to, you know, get it all together, but I think it's going to be good.
And how cool to have something like that when you're around,
you know,
instead of like after you're dead or something. It's like, totally, not to be morbid, but
it's totally historic. It's going to be.
That's amazing. I saw that. I was like, God damn. This is great. Anyone that doesn't go to this is sleeping, man. That's insane.
Yeah. You know? The tickets are selling pretty quickly.
How was it sitting on Live Skull stuff?
Oh, that was so much fun. Their drummer Rich Hutchins, who plays in 500 Rich. Other bands.
Our Great Noise Quintet, we played a bunch with them.
Yeah. And he's got some health issues he's dealing with. He had to get a couple operations.
Oh, man.
So they asked me to sit in for this show. And I mean, you know, I share the space with Mark. And so I said, yeah, you know, and then I was a little nervous because I had to learn all these songs semi quickly. And then I played the show and I pulled it off and everybody loved it. And it was cool. I really enjoyed it because it's been a while since I've actually played a full set with a band, you know.
It's tiring, right? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, not so much tiring. It's just, you know, but yeah, it was just, you know, it was great.
Yeah. And that's, it took me. I discovered Live Skull like later on than a lot of the stuff, but when I found it, I was like, oh yeah, of course this band is contemporaries with all these other bands. It sounds like that they are, you know.
Yeah, I've met Mark and we've been good friends since like 1982.
Yeah,
and you know, so it's just like we've been sharing a space forever, and you know, and we've done projects together before, so it was great.
Yeah, and there's something, you know, that's, for lack of a better term, something that's kind of like, oh, that's fun. You know, that's like an interesting, you know, to get to
now. Now all I have to do is join the Swans. And,
I was going to say what's left. Yeah, right, exactly. Swans would probably be it, right? Yeah.
Which will never happen.
It's awesome that, because you're pretty much done touring at this point, right? You're not, there's not a lot of interest in taking the show on the road at this point.
No, well, not this show, but I mean, I'm not totally ruling it out of the equation. Live Skull had a tour booked for July, like a month long tour, and they asked me, and I just, it not had anything to do with their music or the people. It's just like, that's not what I want to do right now. My girlfriend is, you know, while she's alive, I don't want to go away for that long, you know. And so that tour actually fell through because between not really having a drummer and everything else with the gas prices and
it is so gnarly right now. Yeah, I mean, not that it's ever great, but it is bad right now, boy.
How does it get any worse than a kid raper for president that's giving money to criminals like taking tax money, taxpayers' money, and paying off, you know, the insurrectionists.
Like, yeah, great. Yeah. It's real good. Yeah. By the way, what were we mad about that that happened? Oh, yeah, high prices. Hmm. How about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
God, I mean, so much I could say right now, but I'm not going to. But I we're on the same page. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and but then I also feel like you have to make room and time for art and for joyful things and, you know, not let it become all-consuming. Like, I have to limit my news intake, frankly. Like, I can't spend my time being angry all the time. There's no way.
No.
You know?
I mean, I'm very grateful for everything I do have. Like, I, you know, I'm financially good. I don't have to, you know, worry about that. And, you know, and I just, like, so many offers come in, and, you know, I'm working on a photo book that this hat and beer company out of LA is going to put out. And, you know, and actually this isn't official and it probably won't happen, but I actually got contacted by a casting agent to be in a short film.
That's awesome. That's
you know, so it's just like, who knows if I'll get it or not. I mean, I made it quite clear that I'm not an actor, but, you know.
Well, sometimes they're, sometimes they're looking for somebody with like a vibe or like a look or something.
Well, yeah, the story takes place, you know, about in a New York rock club, and they want me to play this, you know, kind of Richard Hell kind of, you know, has been kind of character. Not has been, but, you know.
Yeah, like, you know,
kind of like from the past. And
sure.
You know, so it's just like, it's not that far of a stretch.
Right, exactly. It's like, oh, yeah, let me practice up. Okay, I'm ready. getting back to your record, you know, the first single was Mississippi Queen, which I thought was great. I was like, that's amazing. Because it's a great cover because, again, quintessential guitar song, right?
Right.
Like, it's like, that's like one of the, oh man, what's that? That guitar line's so cool. I was like, yeah, nowhere to be found, buddy.
Yeah.
But that's how you know it can be a good song in a lot of ways, is if you take out the thing that is known in the arrangement and it still works, then you know it's a good song.
Yeah, see, a lot of the songs on this record really came together with like the last thing, you know, it's just like with Mississippi Queen, I'm like, let me add this megaphone.
Right.
That totally made the song. in a lot of ways. And there's a lot of little things like that. And that's why it was good that, like, I laid down the basic tracks and I would sit on them for like a month. And I was like, okay. And then every time I went back in to do something, even if it was like something I didn't know how to do, like play piano, I knew what I wanted to do and I did it all in one take. There was no agonizing over any of this at all, you know. It's just like so casual, so easygoing, you know. Just me and Mark messing around in the studio. And
well, that kind of that sort of easy, kind of breezy feel to it without it being lightweight kind of comes across. Like it comes across as like, you know, the party in that way. Like, it doesn't sound there's records that like people listen to where it's like, this is great, but this is intense, man. You got to lock in on this. And this is like, no, this is like, you could actually just throw this on and you could be like, wait a second, is that Pablo Picasso? Like the Modern Lover song? What are we doing here? What is this? You know, awesome in a good way. And I think that's, there's something to be said for that. And that, you know, it is indeed very.
I got to, as soon as it comes out, I got to like, there must be somebody I know that could get Jonathan Richman to hear that version.
I mean, that's someone I'd love to have on this show, but I've never even thought about it.
Man,
it has to be someone. All right, tell you what, listeners of the show, someone out there, make this connection, please. Weirder things have happened, but
talk about a unique character, that guy.
Oh my God, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, if he would be legendary if just for Modern Lovers, but everything in his solo career, dude. There's something about Mary. Like being the Greek chorus and something about Mary. Yeah. Amazing. Like, great. Yeah. You know,
I was dancing in the lesbian bar.
Yeah. Wonderful.
But, you know, that Modern Lovers album, that's like in my top 10, you know.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's like That's one of those ones you can listen to. It's like in your blood.
Yeah.
You know?
I've never stopped listening to it since the minute I heard it, like, you know, 40 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, what a band with an interest, such an interesting history.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like one of those things that, again, folks that know, and people that don't are like, oh, yeah, who does that Roadrunner song?
It's, yeah.
It's a Modern Lover.
I met someone recently that, like, is from the town where he lives now. And they say he just, like, every day he's just, like, walking around the streets with his guitar singing.
You know, because that's what, when you think about that guy and you're like, I wonder what that guy's day is like. That's what you're hoping for. Because yeah. You're like, because it's like, he, if there's anyone, it would be him.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, this is, he's just, you know, singing about a, you know, a bird.
He's,
and a,
he's another one okay. That I've only seen live recently, like last year. In Jersey City, you know, it was so good.
I've never seen him. Yeah, I totally have been, and there's not, and it's not like there hasn't been opportunities, but I just, for whatever reason, never have seen him. I'd love to, though. That'd be great. You've been very generous with your time, Bob. I don't want to keep you around for forever. I can't remember if we ever talked about Action Swingers. I've done so many shows. I forget.
I usually try to avoid it, but it's okay.
Yeah, I know it's not your favorite topic. What happened?
What happened? Actually, one afternoon I was just sitting at home, and I get a phone call from Thurston Moore, and he says, hey, me and Julie are playing with this guy, Ned, tonight at CBGB's. We need a drummer. And so I went there. I learned the songs during sound check. And then, you know, as time, and I kept sticking with it. And as time went on, you know, he alienated Thurston. He alienated Julie. Yeah. He alienated Pete Shore. And so we just kept going through the members. And then we went to... we did a tour of England, which was me, Ned, Howie Pyro, and Bruce Bennett. And Ned was kind of out of his mind and caused a lot of whatever. But it was such a great thing that, because that totally bonded me with Howie Pyro. And,
I'm sure, yeah.
You know, and yeah. And we became, you know, and he was so awesome. And it was great because it was his first time in London. That's actually why he took the gig. And he was like, he's such a fanboy collector. And, you know, we had to, like, actually go to the store, you know, that used to be, you know, the set where the Sex Pistols were formed. And now it's like, you know, when we went there, it was like already like this fancy boutique, but we just had to go and stand in and get some vibe. And,
it's legendary. Yeah, of course.
And,
yeah.
And then, you know, he was buying all these singles by the Gorillaz with Jesse Hector. And then it turned out that we had a night off and Jesse Hector was playing in a pub. So we go to the show and, you know, Howie's getting all his records signed. And I have a photo of Jesse Hector signing Howie's records, and Howie has this glow on his face. Like, you know, like unbelievable. And, you know, and so that was the best aspect of it. And I actually, the record that we recorded over there, More Fast Numbers, that's actually my favorite Action Swingers record. And
yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely improved my punk rock fast drumming being in that band.
Sure.
But yeah. It was like, you know, just a lot of drama. And I stuck it out through, like, he was like making enemies with everybody and when he kept, you know, and then he on Facebook, he was insulting me and doing all this stupid crap. And I, you know, finally like totally blocked him out of my life. And then
I remember when he was kind of mouthing off about stuff. I was like, this doesn't seem like a good
yeah,
road.
Then,
to go down. I was like, this is a bummer.
Yeah, you know, it's just kind of like he said and did a lot of stupid crap. And so then his book came out, you know, just last year or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. But, and you know, I refused to pay for it. So I borrowed Skeleton Boy's copy and I was just, you know, relieved that I came out of it unscathed, you know.
Like one of the rare
people that did. You know, and
it's light up the sky. You know,
and even some of the people that he was like bad mouthing is just like he wasn't even giving a reason. It was just kind of like, you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, there was this point, you know, right before we went over to England when grunge was happening and you know, and so he was getting attention. And Everett True did this interview, which I thought I was going to be included in, but wasn't. And then the interview comes out, and you know, he's saying stuff like, you know, what about that drummer from Mudbunny? Somebody should slap him. It was like, why are you saying that?
Being Dan salacious.
Peters is the nicest guy in the world. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, he kept saying things like, you know, the Jesus Lizard and Pavement ruined indie rock. You know, it's just like.
Yeah, he's very, very extra, as some people say.
He's very, I don't know what the word is, bipolar or just, you know, nastiness from combination of bad weed and liquor or what. But anyway, like I haven't seen or talked to him in a really long time. And, but yeah, that wasn't. I mean, it's funny because every once in a while, someone will come up to me and say, like, oh, I love the Action Swingers. And, you know, I mean, out of all the bands I've been in, they're definitely not on the top of the list. Let's just put it nicely like that.
No, and understandable, right? Yeah. Because it's like one of those things where the music is going to be tainted by the experience of the people, right?
And then, you know. And then right around, I guess, so the last show I did with them, I don't know, maybe it wasn't the last show, but when we came back from England, we opened for the Ramones at Columbia University. This is like 92. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, you know, it wasn't the Ramones' best period. It was like they had this bass player, CJ, that sang more songs than Joey.
That's right. He's like, got a podcast now, I guess. Everyone's got a podcast now.
So, you know, and then there was a few other lineups. And then he got into, like, you know, he was like one of those kind of schizo guys where it was just like every time you talk to him, it was just be like,
roll the dice.
Or it would just be like he'd be obsessed with like Beefheart and No Wave. And then like a week later, it was like he wouldn't care about any of that. And he would be into like, you know, garage rock and, you know. But, you know, it's all in the past.
Do you ever keep up with Julia?
Yeah, Julia is on my new album.
Is she really? Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, or I didn't.
Yeah, I overdubbed her voice on "Fuck You, Man."
Oh, okay.
And
my bad. Sorry.
I don't. You know,
I've listened to it. I swear.
I don't say I can't say I keep in touch with her on a regular basis, but yeah, you know, I love her. You know, she's awesome, and you know, I keep in contact pretty much with everybody. Apart from Ned and
except for Ned,
Ned and, you know, Peter.
which yeah. Understandable, frankly.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't. I mean, yeah. I think that guy's fascinating. I don't know if I'd want to have him on the show. That sounds like a nightmare. Yeah,
but he probably wouldn't do it.
He
anyway.
Probably wouldn't do it anyway. Yeah. I know the guy who did the cover for his book, Brian Walsby, is a friend of mine.
Oh yeah, I know Brian from touring with the Melvins.
He's great. Yeah, he's a wonderful dude. But you know, like. It's like one of those things where it's like, I think that dude's best experience from a distance. Not Walsby, Ned.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ned like moved to like Largemont, which I think is where he's from.
Yeah.
And I mean, when he was in New York, he would just walk the streets all day long, you know. Mm-hmm. And so once he moved up there and, you know, he had a daughter who, God, must be 20 by now easily, you know, so I don't know what his life is all about these days. Like, you know, he seemed to like at least quiet up with his bitterness.
Well, that's good. I mean, maybe he's mellowed out, you know. It's possible.
Yeah.
we can have some poor schmuck go check for us.
A few years ago I get this crazy email from this guy Juan, who has Bang Records in out of Spain, mm-hmm. and he's just—it's just like he's going off, and he's probably in the middle of the night, and it's just kind of like he goes, oh, blah, blah, the action swinger, blah 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 blah, you know, In the Red could have them, you know, blah 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 blah, and so it turns out like, and I'm thinking like, oh, yeah, Larry's never going to put out the action swingers, but you know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
So, you know, it turns out that like, you know, probably Juan gave him money and then Ned probably just took the money, whatever.
Wow.
And so it turns out like, you know, Larry's going to put out this Action Swingers record, and he did. And, you know, it was just a, you know, limited vinyl.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I called up Larry. I said, dude, you're going to totally regret this. You know, it's just like the second that record comes out, he's going to be on the phone demanding money.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah. And Larry's like, yeah, no, I know. He's already put me down on all these sites and all this stuff. But I really like the record and, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, okay, well, I'm telling you, I'm warning you.
And, yeah, you would be in a position to know, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah.
You know, and so Larry puts out the record. And then Larry In the Red has their, I don't know if it was their 10th or whatever anniversary. And it was like a weekend long of all these bands. And I went out there. I didn't play, but I was there because it was, you know, everybody was there. And so it turned out that Larry didn't invite Ned to play with the Action Swingers. And Ned like freaked out, wow. You know, told Larry to like take the records off the shelf, blah, 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 blah. Oh, totally, man. Told Larry off and all this stuff. And Larry, you know, I should have listened to you, Bob.
Yeah, you got netted.
I'm like, I hate to say I told you so.
Right, exactly. Poor guy. Oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
So of all the many bands that you've been in, the awesome records that have been put out, aside from the new one, is there any record you can think of, any band that like you kind of wish you got a little more attention? I mean, would it be Bewitched? Would it be that? Like, what would be?
No, I don't have that feeling. I'm really lucky that the very first album I played on was Bad Moon Rising. And I remember when I first met Steve and we were talking about it, and he said, yeah, that one's got legs. And sure enough, you know, it never went out of print. You know, the Pussy Galore records got the attention they deserved. I kind of wish it may. Yeah, and I ran into John recently, and he said that he's going to be reissuing them.
Oh, great. That's awesome.
So I'm happy about that.
I keep hassling him to come on this show. We talked about it. First time we talked about it was when I saw Hitmakers at High Noon in Madison. So how long ago was that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been doing Zoom interviews like pretty much every day for this record. They really, Howard really hooked all this stuff up.
Yeah. Howard's great.
And there's been at least one or two people I talked to that said that they wanted John, but he turned it down. He said he's too shy, you know?
Yeah, that's something I didn't realize until I actually met him in person. I was like, oh, the John Spencer that you see on stage is not the John Spencer that is most of your day-to-day life. Like, you're kind of more of a thoughtful, withdrawn.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
That was a huge breakthrough for me. And it definitely, you know, I never take it, you know, offense if somebody doesn't want to come on the show, or just is like, hey, yeah, let's do it, and then like doesn't follow up. But like, it's also like, it'd be good. I mean, Russell's been on, you know, it's great.
Yeah.
but you know, I get it, you know, it's like maybe and he's like, oh, maybe when there's a new record. I was like, didn't you just put out a record? But okay,
yeah,
whatever, it's fine, it's not everybody's bag.
I kind of wish that the second Bewitched album, Harshing My Mellow, that Steve Albini did, kind of wish that would be pressed in vinyl, but it never happened. And a few people I tried to get to do it wouldn't do it. And so, I mean, it's not like it's such a great album, but
it'd just be nice to have.
That was at a time when, you know, DVDs were the main thing. And,
yeah.
And you know, so, but I can't think of, you know, I don't know. I'm just happy that I did it all and I can't think of anything that deserves more attention than it got.
Well, I think
maybe Lydia Lunch's Urge to Kill.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Because the thing with Lydia is, like, she gets all these records, even still, like, you know, she'll get, like, these records released, and then, you know, we sell them all at the shows or whatever, but you never really see or hear about them otherwise, and they kind of disappear. And
it's almost like people's buying the tchotchke, you know, they're buying the thing that they
let them see. And, you know, and I mean, Lydia puts out so much stuff that I feel like I have 95% of it, but every once in a while I'll come across something like, you know, when did you do this? she made an album with one of the guys from Mars Volta.
And I happened to find it in a
used bin, and I'm like, Lydia, should I buy this? What is this? She goes, oh yeah.
that's hilarious.
Yeah,
that's like whatever. You know, Melvins could be like that, really, honestly, where it's like, one of my favorite bands, but I have trouble keeping up. and I play with the drummer.
exactly.
I haven't even this one with Napalm Death. Haven't heard it. I don't know. I'm sure it's great.
Yeah, I saw it in the store, and I'm like, should I pick it up? And I'm just like, man, I'm still cool. You know, it's just, yeah, I'm sure it is. You know,
but that's a great problem to have when somebody's that creative and consistently like interesting. Like, well, I'm sure whenever I listen to it, it's going to be cool. You know, there'll be something neat about it.
And even like, you know, when we did all those shows with them, it's just like, they also have like, you know, all these limited editions printed up by Hazelmeyer and, you know,
It's a universe in and like of itself.
I had a Pinkett's Abortion Technician, and that was great because that came out when I was touring with them, and I just walked right up to the stage and what they were sound checking, and I said, "Hey, can you guys sign this for me?" And they totally stopped. And,
that's awesome.
You know,
that's got that great. Don't Forget to Breathe, right? It's got that one's.
Yeah.
Great Pinkus song.
Don't forget to breathe.
It's such a great tune, man.
They played that every night. I really love that song. And I still, you know, Buzz still texts me like, you know, like once a week at least, you know. And it was cool.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, it's nice when you're doing things and creating things and, you know, keeping it interesting for yourself. It's always nice when other people pay attention to it and engage with it as well. But, you know, when you truly have an artistic vision, you know, it's kind of like, it's a bonus when other people like it. That's great. But it's not what's driving you. Otherwise you do something entirely different. Right.
Exactly.
So on that note, Beach Bongo Bloodbath. Anything about this record that you'd like to get across that we didn't talk about? I feel like we talked about a lot.
Yeah. Just check it out and buy it.
Yeah. Maybe pick up a copy.
So, like 5 years from now, when I'm on Conan's show again, and he says, "Is there any record that you put out that didn't get enough attention?" I don't want it to be this one.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Come on, people. Let's do right here. That release show was ridiculous, in a good way. Like if you're anywhere in New York, near New York, the ability to get to New York, you obviously need to be at the Bowery Palace for this June 15th.
Yeah. You know,
it's amazing. That's going to be great. I love it. Bob Burt, love having you on. Love having you back. Last thing, I know you've done it before, but it's been a while because I don't remember what we said last time, but why do you do what you do?
Oh, boy. I've been doing it so long, I can't even remember, but, you know, I don't know. I don't even think of myself as a good drummer, but somehow I managed to make some good decisions of what bands to join. And I'm very grateful for everything. I'm going to be 71 in a few weeks, and I'm still here, baby.
Love it. Bob Burt, thanks so much, man. See down the road.
I want to talk more about Red Cross.
Exactly. I'm gonna say we gotta have a side podcast about that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, all right, brother. It's always a pleasure, man.
Till next time.
Bye bye.
There he goes, Mr. Bob Burt, Beach Bongo Bloodbath by Bob Burt. So many bees in that. So many bees. We are going to. I'm going to play it out with. Actually, we talked about the mountain song so much. Let's do the Bob Burt version of a Mississippi Queen. You can get this the real Bob Burt .bandcamp.com. As well as Bar None, you can get the record, CD, digital, all that good stuff. Here you go.
Mississippi Queen.
Oh, you know what I mean.
Mississippi Queen.
She taught me everything. Went down around Vicksburg, around Louisiana way.
Cajun lady, Mississippi Queen.
You know she was a dancer. She moved better on wine while the rest of them dudes were getting their kicks. Boy, I beg your pardon, I was getting mine.
Mississippi Queen.
Well, you know what I mean.
Mississippi Queen.
She taught me everything. The lady, she asked me if I would be her man. You know that I told her I do what I can to keep her looking pretty, buy her dresses that shine while the rest of them dudes were meeting their friends. Boy, I beg your pardon, I was losing mine.
Mississippi Queen by Bob Burt. Beach Bongo Bloodbath. Go get that record, therealbobburt.bandcamp.com. Also available on Bar None. You can get the vinyl, you can get CDs, all that good stuff. Please check it out. It's a cool record. Thank you very much to Bob for coming on the show yet again. Always a pleasure talking to that guy. Hope you guys enjoyed that. The name of the show again is Code Neutron's Protonic Reversal. Thank you so very much for listening to it. You can find the show Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific, streaming live on YouTube and Twitch. Podcasted later everywhere for free, always. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding. ProtonicReversal.com. That's where you get those archives. Get it wherever the podcasts are found, people. Patreon.com/ProtonicReversal, $1 a month. Gets you those episodes just like this one sooner. Helps Let's put the lights on in here. And I deeply appreciate it. So please consider becoming a patron if you enjoy the show. Thank you. Thanks also for folks sharing the episodes around, liking, subscribing your platform of choice. All that helps people discover the show. And Mrs. America, all the ships at sea. It's just a darn nice thing to do, really. So deep appreciation for that as we move towards year 13. What else? What else?
50,000 watts of power.
The Rosas guys are coming up. I'm just going to say it. I don't know what day it's going to be. The Rosas guys are looking forward to that. And lots of other good stuff, so stay tuned on the various things, all the social media, etc.
This microphone turns sound into electricity.
Of course, stay safe out there.
Can you hear me now?
As always.
Out on Route 128.
Check you later.
I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. There is no special girl! It's the end of radio! The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Broadcasting if there's no one there to receive.
Radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day, got my radio. Can you hear me now? This had been a real emergency.